If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the love and life of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Our seminar topic this evening is, how do you connect and maintain your divine connection? So let's start with a little exercise. Take a deep breath and bring yourself forward into your body. Just intend to inhabit your biosphere, filling it with your love and your light and your divine presence. And just relax and close your eyes. And as you take a deep, slow breath, just observe your breath and be aware that you use it to connect with spirit. Take that deep breath and connect. Just that simple. And observe your breath and be aware that you are connected to your divine source. And the proof is that you're listening to me right now. Who is listening? It's you. The one that is beyond the body's ears. You, the divine awareness. You are experiencing that awareness right now. You observe your breath. Who is observing? Awareness, unlimited. That is who is listening. Who is observing? Is something quite separate from your body, your mind. It's so easy to practice awareness. You simply switch to observer mode, to listening, and to sentiency. Sentient being is another term to define the divine. So it's the sentiency of the divine presence that you're feeling and sensing as we do this process. Be aware of anything that's pleasurable. Yes, pleasure is a pathway to the divine. Although you have never ever been in a body, ever, at any time, still, you can use your body to locate yourself, with a capital S, yourself. And you track your beingness through sentiency, through feelings. That is why feelings are a better guide for you than thinking. You can always trust your feelings. So in the higher dimensions, you will find that your senses become heightened and extended and expanded, and they accompany you. They don't remain with the body because, again, the sentiency is the sentient beingness that is the true divine self. One of the names for Lord Krishna is he who is the giver of supreme pleasure. So pleasure itself is a divine attribute. Your senses and sensations that accompany you are extended into the spiritual realms, but only as ecstatic bliss. I know we don't have any idea what that's like here in the physical dimension, unless you've been in very high states of divine absorption. But there is a pure pleasure and delight in the spiritual realms and dimensions that transcends the pleasures that we associate with our physical body. Actually, the body is insentient. The body, truly speaking, is entirely inert. It has no feelings at all. What you're feeling actually is associative, conditioned patterns that exist actually in the mind. However, that part of you that is beyond the mind, that we'd call the sentient being with a capital B, that is who you truly are, has a anchoring into the body in the form of an etheric gas, a gaseous substance that precipitates down in through the nervous system. And it is that precipitation of the sentiency of your innate divine beingness that gives rise to sensation and feeling and causes you to identify with a point of sensation, i.e., the physical body. But again, this is something so subtle that it is not in the physical dimension at all. It is in, at best, what we could call the etheric dimension, which has a physical corollary in the four upper subplanes, but is not actually what we would define as physicality per se. So within the higher realms of sentiency, you experience pure shabd, pure sound, pure beauty, pleasurable tastes, exquisite scents, and orgasmic pleasure. But it's experienced throughout your entire being. Such is mystical union with the divine beloved. Is it any wonder it's likened to a divine marriage? And it is a true marriage when you marry and join in intimate union with your own divine self as the beloved. And therefore, you can raise your vibrations here in this physical dimension through anything that increases pleasure. Now, discern here what is truly pleasurable. For example, some people may think it's pleasurable to party and get drunk. But we know that that pleasure is short-lived and is replaced quickly by dizziness, disorientation, nausea, and passing out at some point. And so the pleasure is like any excitotoxin. It's actually the little rush of energy as your brain cells are dying. That's what excitotoxins do. They actually are the product of the death of cells. So when you eat things that you think are pleasurable and they're filled with excitotoxins or alcohol or whatever it is, be aware that's not pleasure. That's what you would call the ego's substitution for genuine pleasure. So discern again, what is genuine pleasure is always going to be associated with divinity. And divinity is purity. It has no admixture. So the more pure, the more unalloyed it is with the lower mind and the lower consciousness that's conditioned, the more pure and direct and divine the pleasure. So pleasurable sensations release dopamines. And dopamines cause you to feel happy. And pleasure and beauty are ways to raise your vibration because they both increase your dopamines. So you need to transcend the inner critique, the inner critic, and that part of the mind that likes to compare, judge, have opinions, and that causes you to feel guilty and unworthy and to let your mind block the present experience of pleasure. So all of that arises from the ego mind. And any one of these things, judging, comparing, critiquing, feeling guilty, unworthy, all of those will lower your vibrations and dull your pleasure. You know that if you pay any attention to yourself in your own experience. So, underlying every question that spiritual seekers ask, there seems to be one desire, and that's to know how to connect with spirit and maintain that connection. And whenever anyone asks a personal question, what I've noticed is that what they really want to know is not their question. They don't want the answer to their question. Actually, they really want to know, how do I connect and maintain my spiritual connection? They just don't quite know how to ask it. So if you don't mind, please let me answer from my own experience. Connecting with the divine and maintaining that divine connection is my number one top priority, must have, non-negotiable in my life. Yep, that's the one thing I must have in my life. So that's all I'm doing. Regardless of my outer involvements, I am practicing the seeing of the Divine Beloved and remembering that this world is only a dream. I remind myself this constantly. Whenever I find myself getting caught up at all and starting to go unconscious, going into reaction mode or conditioned reflexes, I stop and remind myself that all of this is a dream. And in highest truth, I've never left the heart of God. So let me ask you, how do you connect with the divine? What methods have you found that work for you in staying connected? I think this is a great journaling exercise. If you could write down everything you can think of that lifts and inspires and gives you a sense of mindless absorption and pleasure. Mindless absorption. You know, you'll notice if you're aware that whenever the mind is present, you're in a lower state of vibration and you're not totally enjoying your life. Why is that? Because the lower mind, the ego mind, is always connected to the past or projected into the future and is never truly present with its whatever it's doing here and now. And so it never has that sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. Now you have a higher level of mind, which we'd call the divine intellect or the buddhi, but it functions, it functions through intuitive knowing. So it doesn't have to go into the thinking process. So just be aware of when you're in the lower mind, that you're in a state of mental agitation. You're not having that sense of peace and wholeness. And you can elect to, at that moment, focus on something extremely beautiful, or you can choose to remind yourself that you're looking at images your mind has made, you're reacting to interpretations, and that it's all a dream. And actually, there's nothing you need to do about any of it but recognize that. And immediately, you step free. You step into a higher level of consciousness. So, for me, living in a state of divine inspiration, where I'm spirit-filled and enthused about my life and what I'm involved with, is more important and vital to me than eating every day. I can easily go without a meal or two, but I cannot endure a moment without sensing the divine presence. I'd be like a fish out of water. I'd simply die. So a person desperate for food will do anything to appease their hunger. A mystic has an all-consuming hunger for the divine presence and will also go to any length to appease that hunger. However, note the difference, because it's quite significant. While physical hunger is easily fulfilled with a single meal, the hunger for the divine presence only increases with every contact. And that is what causes a mystic to seek to discover the ways of maintaining that divine connection. And these are practiced and practiced until total union is attained. And then only is that state permanent. This is the state of divine union that Jesus the Christ had attained, that enabled him to declare, "The Father and I are one. If you have seen me, you have seen the Father." Of course, he wasn't talking about his body, his personality. He was talking about the divine presence. So that state has been referred to in Sanskrit as Sahaja Samadhi, which means natural, equal-mindedness, where everything is seen through the lens of divinity. So, that one that is in the world, but no longer aware of the world as separate, is in that state where they are in the divine presence. They are in Sahaja Samadhi. And that is the state that Jesus was referring to also when he said that we are to love God with all our heart and all our mind and all our strength, and to love others as our own self. That, of course, has to arrive from Sahaja Samadhi, that state of divine union. So, according to the ancient wisdom of the Vedas, the cause of all human suffering is simply forgetting who we are. And we suffer because we have forgotten that we are divine, that we are immortal spirits, forever one with our divine source. And this loss of conscious divine connection is the root cause of every form of suffering, every dis-ease, and every single addictive pattern. It's interesting with addiction that your addictive pattern is the very area where you feel the most inadequate and the most in the sense of lacking divine union. So even in the case of the addictive patterns, to recognize that void, that emptiness, that hunger, that repetitive urge and compulsion to reach out to that whatever it is that has become your crutch to move through life, that the real root of that is the hunger for your divine presence, acknowledgement of your own wholeness and holiness. So we have identified with the material world, which we've totally bought into as reality. And when we've done that, we have disidentified with the spiritual world, which then we simply believe to be an option for some people, maybe if they have time or they're, quote, religious. But by and large, it's sort of taken by the modern world to be fantasy, mythology, basically unreal. It's put into the category of religion, philosophy, but seldom taken very seriously. And that is what we've believed. And so we see a world that reflects that belief, because the world has to bear testimony to us as extensions of the divine creative intelligence by replicating in exact accordance with what our mental image is projecting. Like the mind is that movie projector. And you're either watching the ego's reel, its film, or you're watching the Holy Spirit's film. And it's all a matter of which of the mindsets you are allowing to govern what you see when you open your eyes. You know, when it all gets boiled down to its essential essence, the only thing that we can absolutely for sure know about anything, you know, it's like if I would ask you, what do you absolutely, absolutely know for sure, is that I exist. I am. I'm breathing, feeling, thinking, so I'm alive. And that recognition is a good place to start, for at least you have that much in alignment with the absolute Vedic truth, where you can say, I am. In Sanskrit, it's aham, or soham, which is actually the mantra that your breath is repeating with every inhalation and exhalation. Soham. And there you have your mantra and your breath of life. So that alone could be your divine connection and connector. Simple. You know, truth is always really simple. It's the mind that concocts all these elaborate have-to-dos. Everything we truly need, God has already equipped us with. It's already downloaded as apps in our system. It's already there. We just have to learn how to work it, to activate it. So, a very simple way is to just remind yourself, I am. And that I am, and the great I am that I am, are forever one, forever united as one. So whenever you say, I am, well, that's who God also says when you ask, who are you? I am that I am. So that's it. You just keep connecting with that divine through your breath and remembering the I am that's forever united as one with be all that is. And as you practice that, and you know, you don't need any special time or place or equipment, that alone would enable you to awaken to your true divine identity. And the Vedas also teach that the other cause of suffering, aside from forgetting who we are, is that which we endure when we forget our I Am connection and forget observing our breath, and we begin to totally get involved with and identified with the contents of the material world and our material life. It's not that it's different from spirit. It's that the mindset that's looking is either looking through the eyes of separation and material distance and alienation, which would be the viewpoint of the ego mind, the lower mind, or it's looking through the eyes of the divine spirit, which only beholds the oneness and holiness of the beloved. So these two ways of looking at life will show you very different worldviews. And the one that causes great suffering is when we obviously can see that we live in a world that is continually changing, aging, and dying, and nothing stays the same. And so this causes great anxiety and worry and suffering, because when you're identified with that worldview, you are continually trying to control and maintain and manipulate and somehow find security within this ever-changing state of affairs, these ever-changing relationships, and that's impossible. So everything in this material world will change, will leave, will disintegrate, will disincorporate or die, no matter what you think, believe, do, or attempt to do to be secure in this material world. And that's the world that the human mind has entirely invented out of forgetting reality, losing sight of who you truly are. And it's that worldview, that separated sense of self, that the ego lives in entirely and relates to as being reality. And that's the state of almost everyone in this world. Self-realized people are very rare, but more and more people are awakening. And they may not be totally self-realized, but they're beginning to awaken beyond the dream. They're beginning to realize that the world really is a big ego's nightmare run amok. You know, on steroids, psycho world. But that there is actually a greater reality that transcends what we think we see and feel and experience here. And more people are having those experiences that we would call transcendental. And science is beginning to also explore that with quantum mechanics and quantum physics. So we're beginning to understand ourselves more in terms of consciousness and energy. And thus our paradigm is beginning to shift. And this is part of the paradigm shift. This is what is going to produce a new world and a different approach to everything in life. Because when we realize that that person out there is our own self in a mirrored reflection that we have as our consciousness pattern, in other words, the person in front of you is simply a mirror of a pattern that you have in your own consciousness, you're going to treat other people as yourself. You're going to treat other people as you would have yourself be treated. And unless you're, a masochist, you're going to try very hard to only give what you would receive in return, because that's exactly what is happening, and with greater rapidity. It's like there's not going to be a third-dimensional earth to work through certain karmic patterns. So karma is almost instant now, which means what you put out boomerangs back almost immediately. It may look different. It may not be in exactly the same mode, but if you look carefully, you'll see the pattern. For example, deceit. You can't get by with even a little. There's really no such thing as a little white lie. All lies are deceitful. But even the smallest form of deceit opens you up to a whole realm where people take advantage of you. And what you're doing is actually creating the mirror reflection of people taking advantage of you, because you're running subtle forms of deceit and you don't realize the karmic connection. For example, people that go into anger, that have a bad temper, lose control of their astral body. These are the people that meet with accidents, explosions, get caught in fire, burn themselves, or cut themselves when they're preparing their vegetables for the evening meal. You don't always see the connection, but cutting words lead to cutting yourself when you're cutting your vegetables. Isn't that interesting? Road rage could actually cause your motor to overheat, and you could blow a gasket or physically create a heart attack or a stroke. These are direct correlations to the way we're operating in our world and with others. Now, if you're one of those people that's constantly ready to point out the evil and the negativity in other people, guess what you're increasing in your own environment? That's where you open yourself up to a similar reflection coming back to you energy-wise. Very interesting. So the connection between the energy that you're putting out in the world and what you meet as you move in your daily life, you need to pay attention. Impeccability is absolutely essential to walk in spiritual freedom. True impeccability is where the words that you speak are in complete alignment with what you truly, deeply believe is so. In your heart of hearts. It's also matching your behavior to your highest values when you're alone and nobody's watching. It's also really thinking before you hit that send on your email if what you are getting ready to send and communicate you want to be floating out there in cyberspace forever, because it will be in cyberspace forever. And that energy will come back to you in like manner. Is it as true, as centered, as loving as you can possibly make it? You may have to read and reread and write and rewrite and delete a lot of your emails before you send them, or just save them to draft and think about them, and then go back to them and reread them and see if they're as clear as you can possibly make that communique. That is taking responsibility for your own energies, your own self-expression. And it's also a very important way to avoid creating unpleasant negative situations for yourself in the world. Because you will have to meet and experience and address every single energy that you have sponsored and released out into this world. You know, that's what the first thing that happens when you die and you leave your body. And you have a life review. And there you get to experience not only seeing yourself in these interactions, but actually feeling the effect that it had on that person out there. Yeah. Wow. So this is something that, this is the real ecology, the spiritual ecology, that every single one of us is called to practice now. There's no such thing as a little white lie. There's no such thing as a little deceit. There's no such thing as a little upset or a little dislike or a little negative opinion. They all hide the light of the world that you are. Of Course in Miracles has a very important lesson. Love holds no grievances. My grievances hide the light of the world that I am. So those little things where we imagine ourselves to be exempt or different from, or we justify all the reasons why, you know, none of that really flies in the face of the law of karma or the lords of the karmic board. You know, that's not going to get you any brownie points because you were the best whistleblower on the egos of everybody out there in the world. Yeah, there are people out there doing that, but they're operating out of a different level of consciousness. And it's one you have to ask yourself, is this really what I want to see and increase in myself? Because one of the things that we are responsible for is the thoughts and the imagery and the energy that we generate in our brothers and sisters. Course of Miracles says that the reason for relationships is to make happy. They're to make us happy. And they're also to serve as our companions that we're walking home. We're walking each other home. And no one enters heaven alone. We go in two by two. We go in with our brothers and sisters. And so no one is dispensable. No one, you can say, oh, well, they don't matter. Who cares about them? You're going to care about them when you realize that them is you. And their salvation, their well-being, their happiness, their joy, their blessing, their good fortune, and how you regard it is exactly what you're carving out for yourself in your own future. That is why when we truly awaken, we bless everything and everyone, all the time, no exceptions. We completely relinquish that tendency to find fault with anyone. It is not our job to find fault, to complain, to criticize. It is not our job to correct, to transform. Only the Divine Spirit can do that. We are here to be embodiments of the Christ, of that unconditional, pure, anointed love of the Divine Source. That's all. The physical body itself, when it's used correctly, is simply to serve as a communication device for love. When you use your body to communicate things other than love, it pay the price with disease, lowered immune systems, and eventually a shortened life. So we're always responsible for ourselves, for our life, for our consciousness, for our energy, for managing ourselves and directing ourselves in alignment with our highest divine levels of consciousness. It's, you know, 24/7 vigilance. That is the price of freedom. Vigilance, practicing awareness. But it's very simple. It all boils down to being kind. Kindness is simply the expression of higher consciousness in the human level. Kindness. If you just paid attention to kindness, it would kind of take care of everything else. That means when people get nasty and gnarly and start yelling at you, sending you ugly emails or whatever, you don't react in like kind. You go silent. You don't feed and foster that energy. But you absorb it into your love and dissolve it so that your brother or sister feels a little bit lighter. Maybe they just had a need to release some tension and pain. And your light energy looked like a good place to release it into. So don't increase their suffering. Just absorb it. Just absolve it in love. And don't pay much attention, because when people are suffering the disease of birth and death, and samsara, suffering and impermanence, they're not going to act and behave nicely. They're in deep suffering. And the suffering and the wounded are the ones that lash out in negativity. So your job is to heal yourself by remembering your wholeness, and forgive yourself by remembering your holiness, and forgive others by looking past their pain to their holiness. And you've given them the greatest gift you could possibly give them. Doesn't mean you have to be buddy-buddy. Doesn't mean that you have to, you know, keep in contact with these people. No, I don't think it's necessary to keep contact with people that aren't on the same page. What's the point? But just make sure that your page is as impeccable as it can possibly be. And the world and your brother and sister out there is your mirror. So the Vedas give us the happy news that this world is not reality at all. It is merely a mental veil that we've drawn across the face of the real world. The Vedas teach us in very simple terms that we are birthless, deathless, immortal, ever pure, and forever one with God. And that, in fact, we are one in our true nature and identical with God. The Vedas teach us that the world is entirely unreal. It is a mirage our mind has taken to be real, but upon closer approach and scrutiny, simply vanishes. So again, I remind you that a spiritual exercise is to make a practice of stopping at various points during your day, particularly if you notice yourself getting overly caught up in the news or whatever, your job, whatever. And just take a second to remind yourself that this is simply a dream, and I am forever home with God. And the more you remember that in the physical dimension, the more it will carry over into your dream state. And you know you've secured it in your subconscious when you start remembering in your dream to remind yourself that you're only dreaming. Then you know there's been a transfer into the subtle levels of your consciousness, which repetition will cause to happen. So this applies to your waking, so-called life, as well as your life when you're asleep. And both of these dreams will vanish like a mirage with your full awakening. And again, this is so helpful when you find yourself getting upset for any reason. You know, just stop and take a deep breath and remind yourself, this is only a dream. This too shall pass. Then there is this state where it's become your nature. It's just become your absolute second, not even your second nature. It's become who you are and what you are all the time. And that's the value of consistent reminding yourself, is that eventually, like any other state of consciousness, when you practice it enough, after a while, it becomes your automatic response. When you no longer make criticizing others an option, and you make a priority of being kind no matter what, when you make it a habit of responding from the truth, as you are aware of it in any given moment, without apology or justification, you just state as kindly and as gently as you can what is so for you, you'll find that your life gets so much smoother and happier. And you don't attract those same negative dramas anymore. You know, because I've practiced these things all my entire life, it's what I really enjoy the most to share with you in each of these weekly seminars. And I've discovered a bazillion ways to connect with the divine and to cultivate a divinely oriented life. But the important thing is for you to discover your own keys. Because while all of our keys are, in some cases, the same or similar, we also each have our own personal relationship with the beloved to cultivate. And that's what's so important. I was watching a program which was very, very good called Global Spirit on television. And recently they had a show with mystics, and they were discussing how they connected with God. Usually they'll have God seekers or religious scholars or mystics or rabbis or priests or whatever. But this was interesting to me because they were discussing how they connected with God and kept that connection going. And one of the people was a former nun who simply could not connect with God at all through prayer. She absolutely couldn't pray. And she got nothing out of Mass and the formal rituals or examining her conscience, all the things that nuns are expected to do. And thinking herself to be a total failure, she finally left the convent after 7 years and for a while wanted nothing more to do with anything religious or even spiritual. She, however, loved to study and read and write. And while absorbed, which is the key word, because she was totally absorbed in what she loved to do by her nature, she would have flashes of insight and expressed her epiphanies and her connection with something beyond her personal self. And she wrote many, many wonderful books and became a very highly valued speaker and realized a woman of God. But again, it's important to notice your nature. How do you, by nature, draw into divine communion? And there was a rabbi also that shared how he also connected with the divine, that which was greater than himself, through reading the Torah and through study of the Torah. And he said that as he became absorbed in reading the Word, he derived great rushes of insight and joy, which is another key, through his scholarly method of connecting. And the Sufi mystic connected also through study, quiet contemplation, and reflection of what was revealed to him while he was alone in nature. And I recognize that these were some of the major ways that I've also connected, in that I'm also a lifelong student of life and a spiritual scholar of the mystical and scriptural and esoteric and metaphysical and Vedic traditions of all times. And when I'm studying, I become totally absorbed in what it is I'm reading, and thus I transcend the mind and the personal self and gain tremendous joy and satisfaction in learning. Personally, I connect much more easily through study and journaling and participating in seminars and study circles and through sharing with others insight and revelation. And I'm energized and inspired through group participation and interchanges. And so participation in my areas of interest and enthusiasm is a major key for me. Now, some people connect more easily through silent retreats and solitude, and they don't enjoy being around groups of people. So observe and see if you are one who is inspired and activated and motivated by being in groups and interacting with others, or if you're one who is better able to connect more easily when alone without interacting. And this is, again, part of getting to know yourself and recognizing and honoring your own nature and going with your natural inclination. So we're all divinely designed to have a unique spiritual individuality with a capital I, even though we are all soul rays and extensions of one divine source. So likewise, pay attention to whatever raises your vibration. That is, whatever gives you pleasure, makes you happy, opens your heart, gives you a little thrill of joy. That is lifting your vibratory rate. And that lifting of your vibratory rate is a divine connection. I was recently in a restaurant and enjoying just watching the many forms and manifestations of God that was seated all around me. And all of a sudden, I was overwhelmed with such love for humanity that tears started flowing down my cheeks. And my vibration shot up so high that the room suddenly disappeared into pure white light. And I needed to have an ice cube placed in my hand and be made to drink some ice water in order to begin to feel my body again. And this often happens to me lately when my vibrations raise to the point where my surroundings vanish into pure white light. So learning to live openly in the world and to maintain God consciousness at the same time is a cultivated skill. You know, living in that state so you appear just normal enough so they don't cart you off to the nearest psychiatric ward, is a very necessary acquired skill if you're choosing to remain here a while longer. Normally, when you get to that stage, you're allowed to go home because basically you're, at a level where you don't need to be here on the planet anymore. But many of us are coming into that state, I believe, and we're choosing to stay in the world to help others so that we can all awaken to a higher level of consciousness So I know that's true for myself. I'm consciously choosing to remain here. But, you know, sometimes, try as I may, I'm just unable to lower my vibrations enough to behave appropriately. Sometimes it looks really goofy. So fortunately for me, at least, I have someone usually with me who understands and can help me to get more grounded and connected to the physical planet. So if you're also having similar episodes of divine whiteouts, a strong physical sensation can really help you to find your body. I actually lose track of where my body is. So for me, ice cubes work, or someone just holding my hand and squeezing it and talking me back into a here and now physical level focus. And I'm also aware now, if I start to dwell too much upon the beauty of the divine all around me, and I start to feel that love begin to swell within my heart, that I'll start to vibrate beyond my environment, and it will start to disappear. So is that a bad thing? No. It's probably going to happen to everyone at some point. It happens when we are living more upon a higher vibratory plane of consciousness than we are here. And there will come a point, I believe, when our vibration is more compatible with that higher level than here, and then we will simply disappear from here and appear at a higher level. This may actually be what they're talking about when they speak of the rapture. Or perhaps it's when we transfigure and ascend. I don't know for certain in terms of the belief systems out there. I only know what I'm experiencing now. And if I don't believe that I'm any different than any other light worker, then I can assume that many of you are starting to have these experiences too, and what I'm sharing in these seminars is also helpful for you. So either way, our work is cut out for us. Whether we're making a divine connection for the first time and starting to maintain it more consistently, or whether our challenge is simply anchoring it enough to remain here to serve longer, it's still all about divinely connecting and maintaining and anchoring that connection here and now. So let's go out chanting Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace to all beings and all the worlds. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. God bless you. Peace to all of you. I love you. Adonai.